Committee, I welcome you with open arms.
Is that so? How late do you stay open?
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGM Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I am Tom Hush, and normally you'd hear from my co-host, Connor Cornelius, right now, but he is up in Lac du Flambeau doing whatever you do in Lac du Flambeau, probably enjoying himself out on the water, just taking a weekend off, but that's okay. I'm here to talk a lot of Chicago cinema today. Just a few things. A reminder, we will be doing a Q&A for Nick Alonzo's Decaf Don coming up this Friday. That's going to be over at 6740 right next to the new 400 Theater in Rogers Park. It's a great little micro cinema space. They'll be showing the film, and they will also be letting us chat with Nick again and some of the folks who worked on the film. And it's going to be a lot of fun. Head on over to our Facebook page. You can find the event there, or just look for Decaf Don on Facebook, Nick Alonzo as well. All the details are there. That's going to be Friday, I believe that's the 26th, at 6740, right next to the new 400 Theater on Sheridan Road in Rogers Park. All right, so today, for this conversation in Chicago cinema, I'm very lucky to be speaking with a director and an editor. She has a new short coming out. It's fantastic. Follows two sisters, one of them returning back to her hometown to help celebrate her mom's birthday, but also do a sort of clearing of house, both physically and emotionally. It is so good. I really enjoyed watching it, and I think everybody listening will enjoy it as well. So let me bring into the conversation Ashley Thompson, director and editor. Ashley, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me. This is really cool.
So tell us a little bit about your short, and I want to make sure I'm getting the name right. I Miss Jamie When She's Gone.
Yes, that is the title. It's kind of long. Yeah, it's follows two sisters, like you said, kind of distant emotionally and physically. And I think one kind of has gravitated towards their mother, who still lives pretty close to her. And then Jamie has moved and is working in a different state. And so Jamie comes home and under the guise of celebrating mom's birthday, but it really kind of is to clean up her house because she has kind of become a hoarder since mm-hmm. their father has passed away. Yeah.
And it just goes from there. It's a really great evolving contained little story that, I really, by the end of it, I kind of wondered if you would be thinking about turning it into a full feature, because the characters were really interesting and I was really invested in their story. And obviously within the short, it has a very clear beginning, middle, and end, and a somewhat of a resolution in terms of, the two sisters making a symbolic gesture with their father's couch, mm-hmm. And all that sort of stuff. And it felt complete, but I did see a way for this to become a feature. Have you ever thought about expanding it?
Yeah, I've gotten that a few times from people. Even one of the actors, this woman named Maria Morris, who plays mom, she's like, I could definitely see this kind of turning into something larger than just the short. I currently don't have any desire to do that. I feel pretty good about it just remaining as a short, but if it were to get picked up by someone who wanted to make it a feature, I would definitely entertain that idea. And I think there could be a lot more. I wrote a lot of scenes and then scaled it back. So mm-hmm. more things could certainly happen. I think the audience could get a better sense of just who the characters are individually versus like how they relate to each other mm-hmm. Specifically. So I've thought about it, but I want to work on other things too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's nice to have a little story that you feel is complete,
yeah.
And you can just say, yeah, this is, maybe there's some themes or some ideas that you might return to in different work, but I Miss Jamie When She's Not Here is kind of just going to be its own thing, and people can go see it that way. tell me a little bit about bringing these characters into life, because one of the things I notice is that it's a very naturalistic movie, both in the acting, the dialogue, and the camera itself. I never felt like I was watching a movie in a sense. Mm-hmm. Things felt very natural. The camera was looking in places that felt natural, and it had somewhat of a just to use a common phrase, like mumblecore feel, kind of Joe Swanberg sort of thing that indie cinema fans are very familiar with. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I'm not really a writer, so I didn't really want to write a script. I knew that I wanted to improvise my movie mostly. And then Mac and Jamie, the two sisters, are actually sisters in real life.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So I wanted to make a short that, felt true to itself, didn't feel like overacted or anything. I've never really directed anything before. So I wanted to make sure that the relationship between the two sisters was authentic and not like forced. I'm also super inspired by my friends who are in it. So the White family is really incredible. They have a couple other siblings as well that I'm really just so inspired by. And I felt like they are very open people and were able to just play in real life. Like, we'll go out and just be hanging out and kind of like acting, performing together. And so it just felt right to cast them. So I wrote the film for them to be in. What was the overarching question for you?
So, I mean, it's just a very naturalistic movie, and right. And you can kind of tell that the actors involved are discovering their roles on camera as the audience discovers mm-hmm. them too. And you mentioned that you've never really directed anything before. What kind of work were you doing with the actors to help them right. realize those roles, and what was that relationship like between you and the actors?
Yeah, so I would say like several months before we went into production, I would just meet with Erin, who plays Jamie, and then Natalia, actually. She's another sister of theirs. She was going to play Mac. So I was meeting up with them like twice a month for a couple months. And then we were just really wanting to kind of create a story that they felt like they knew like the back of their hand. It wasn't necessarily their story. It wasn't my story, but we just wove a story together. So while they were on screen, they knew what to reference. Like, they knew like when their dad died, how their dad died, what the relationship between mom and their dad was like, what their relationship was like. So it wasn't necessarily like they had to find those things out while they were like playing and improvising with each other. And like 4 days before production, Natalia unfortunately fell like super ill.
Oh, no.
And Greta, who plays Mac in the movie, she was just on crew for wardrobe. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. We're like 4 days out. Okay, scrambling. Can we push the production dates? Can I find an actor in time? And Greta, I called her and she's like, okay, I know you know what's happening, but like, I just want to say, like, I can step in if you want me to step in for this role. Like, she was at a lot of the rehearsals. So mm-hmm. it kind of just fell into place. And I think her performance was just so natural, so incredible, almost like it was meant to happen, even though I love Natalia and wish I could have made that with her because she was in it from the get-go. So then like a couple days before we actually shot, we were just meeting up like every day and kind of running the scenes, practicing at my house, not necessarily nailing like what words they're saying, but more so just nailing like emotional points of like the scenes. And I think it definitely helped us because then when we got on set, it wasn't like, what are we doing?
Yeah. What's my line?
Right.
Yeah.
I did feel like a week out, I was like, wow, I don't have a script and I'm directing this thing. And why did I choose to like go like the improvising route? But
it's gotta be a freeing sort of thing.
It is freeing, but it was also really scary because I was like, I don't know. I have all these people behind me rooting for me and like making this thing with me, but I don't know what I'm doing. But it really came together and I really enjoyed it. I don't know if I really want to work with like a set script. I probably will in the future, but yeah, it just really came together, I think. And the way that we shot it, I think, lends itself to kind of cutting together something that is a little bit more improvisational. I get a lot of inspiration from the person, I think his name is Robbie Reynolds, I hope. Ryan Reynolds? No, it's not Ryan Reynolds. who shoots Andrea Arnold's films.
Okay.
I think it's just very loose and poetic, and I like love shooting people's hands, and I think like when things are improvised, you're able to cut around in that dialogue a bit more when you're not just stuck on someone's like coverage.
Well, it feels conversational because when we're, you know, when someone's having a conversation, you're not just constantly looking at their eyes
exactly.
and their face. You'll maybe notice their hands. And I believe there was a scene when one of the sisters was in a bar talking to a neighbor, an old neighborhood friend. I noticed there was just a cutaway to the neighbor's hands and it kind of holds there for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it felt like, oh, yeah, this is where my eyes would be moving too. And that was the interesting part about it, is that the camera felt like someone's eyes looking around the room. I particularly enjoyed the scene in the dance club, where it was kind of moving around and you were dancing with her and you were, you know, checking out the entire room, and it didn't feel static. It felt alive and vibrant and that sort of thing. And to the point of the improvisation, again, another scene I really liked, when the two sisters have a fight about their mom. It's really hard to nail dialogue that feels natural in a fight, because, you know, you tend to want to elevate it, and you're, you know, every character is saying the most biting thing possible about the other, and it's really constructed, who's the winner, who's the loser, whereas this, it was literally a fight between sisters.
Yeah.
It was literally those two going at each other in a way that felt like, oh, I'm sitting here watching, like I felt like a fly on the wall.
I'm so glad. Yeah. I'm really so glad. That's like an amazing compliment.
It's a very cool thing.
Yeah, I didn't want it to feel like exploitative of like real emotions that they're having, but I do. I don't know. I'm not an actor, but I do think like acting and like playing in that way is a type of release. Like you're able to kind of tap into maybe emotions or a role that you can't be in your real life. And I wanted to make sure that like the feelings that were coming across were authentic, but they weren't like, yeah, again, just kind of exploiting like their actual feelings about their sister or their mom, you know. That's why I think it's important that we just kind of made this narrative together versus me writing something about, I don't know, like what I don't know, because I wrote it for them. I didn't want it to feel like this was their story.
Yeah, you don't want to feel like voyeuristic or something
exactly.
like that. How did you meet the White family? I'm curious.
Ooh, how did I meet them? I think I met Greta through my longtime collaborators, Jessica Marks and Eve Rydberg, probably in like 2012. Greta is an amazing set designer and performer and theater makeup person. She does it all, really. And she was helping do set design for this play that we were putting together at this DIY space called Young Camelot.
I know Young Camelot.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think I met her there, but that's like kind of the first time that we like connected and clicked and worked together. And then I would just see her out and about, and then I met Natalia, her younger sister, at a 4th of July party one summer when I had gotten back from Hawaii, and like me and Natalia really clicked, and it was kind of just started from there. I think we would like hang out with friends together, but then me and Greta and me and Natalia just kind of made our own separate relationships. And then Erin, their older sister, I'm not exactly sure when I met her. It must have been at their house. I don't know, but I feel like me going to the White's house, like I feel like one of their sisters. Like I feel like part of their family. And so, I don't know, it was easy to just kind of fit right in with them and like be inspired by what they do, what their family does, who they are as people, you know.
Speaking of DIY spaces, you know, the DIY work ethic is, you know, very strong, is by reputation, you know, whether it's in music or performance art or whatever. Generally people in the DIY scene are very much about, you know, self-reliance and you know, getting things done for the sake of doing them. How did you use that DIY ethos in this particular instance?
Yeah, I mean, I did not have that much money going into it. No. So,
you know, independent film rarely does. You know.
A lot of people are working on we're working on a very small stipend. My DP even like gave up his stipend to put towards the production, which was really sweet. So I don't know, this film I had in my mind for a couple years. I think I started writing it in like end of 2015. And obviously I had talked to Natalia about it, talked to Aaron about it in the very preliminary stages. And then it was really kind of my friends who were like, yeah, so that short that you've been writing, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, you're right. What am I doing? I don't know. I'm not doing anything with it. So I asked my friend Judy, my producer, if she wanted to produce it. And she said yes. So it was kind of like, I don't know. I work with VAM, VAM Studio, and Vince Martell, who founded it, is really like a huge encourager, I would say, and was like, okay, Ashley, well, it's 2018. You said you wanted to direct stuff, so you might as well direct this. We're waiting.
Yeah.
yeah, and then really like all my friends worked on it. So I think I am lucky enough to work with people that want to make people's artwork and their friends' work. And so it was really lucky that like my friend Greg Ray, who was the DP, was like, cool, yeah, I'll shoot it. Judy, yeah, of course I'll work on it, not getting paid or anything. And then Full Spectrum Features also started to produce it, which was great. They are really knowledgeable and really, I don't know, committed to making work with people that necessarily don't have like the funds or the platform to like share their stories. And so we got a fiscal sponsorship from them since they're a nonprofit also. So that really helped to just like keep costs down and ask for donations and borrow a person's van for 3 days. Like there was a lot of favors pulled, but I hope that, yeah, I didn't like overextend my asks too much.
Yeah, well, it's a common thread in the Chicago film scene and in the Chicago creative scene in general that there's a lot of people here that want, you know, art to happen in the city and are willing to forego financial reimbursement or, you know, any sort of financial gain for the sake of the art itself. So it really doesn't surprise me that a group of people would want to come together and make this happen with no budget, essentially.
Right.
I wanted to touch on one of the central feelings of this piece, which is it's got a very particular Midwesternness to it. And it's one of those things that is really hard to describe. I'm want to use a quote like I can't define it for you, but I know it when I see it. It's one of those sorts of feelings. You're from Palatine.
Yes, Palatine.
Tell me a little bit about your upbringing there and how that informed, you know, this story.
Yeah. Palatine. I love and hate Palatine. I think it's a great place to grow up. And then I think when you turn like 19, you're like, what am I doing in Palatine? Until you're like 35, when you're like, okay, I'm ready to move back to the suburbs.
Oh.
I don't know. That's how I feel about it. But I think there is a lot of charm and I don't know. There's like a lot of stories in the suburbs that I feel like are really interesting. My parents still live in the suburbs, both my dad, stepdad, and mom. And when I go back there, I am weirdly inspired by like the grocery store or like the park and the dynamics at the park. And like, I don't know, running into people that you hadn't seen in a long time, right?
Since, yeah,
like high school. I don't often go back there that much. So I think there's like also kind of like an emotionally desolate landscape of the suburbs that I'm interested in, where people are a bit more sheltered or a bit more attached to their like personal narratives that like, I don't know. It's just because I'm from there and my family is attached to the narratives that they're attached to. But I do think like there is like this weird disconnect sometimes with people from the suburbs. I don't know. I don't want to sound like, live in the city and now I'm not like, I don't know.
You know, it's not like it's not fun or difficult or, right. or it's pretty easy to dunk on the suburbs, you know, in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I really like that, like the attached to one's own narrative.
Yeah.
I think that's very common in the suburbs of Chicago, because people in the suburbs of Chicago, while they are very fine people, you know, just average everyday Americans right. going through life just as much as any other person, there is a tendency to define themselves in relation to the city, insofar as they can pick and choose the best parts of being close to Chicago mm-hmm. while also being able to distance oneself. The best analogy I can think of is, you know, Northwestern University, their football team, say, like, they have all these billboards around, you know, Chicago's Big Ten team and all right. this kind of other BS. And it's... And I should be careful because we broadcast Northwestern right. football on this station. So, yeah, but it's this whole thing where it's like, oh, yeah, we're Chicago's Big Ten team, but we're located in Evanston, which so often divorces itself from the, you know, the crime of Chicago and mm-hmm. the unseemly element of being part of Chicago. You know, when bad things happen in Chicago, Northwestern is like, well, we're in Evanston, right. which is different. And I've always kind of hated that, but understood it because suburbanites are suburbanites. Mm-hmm. Is it better to understand that you are not from Chicago and that the narratives that you have attached to you are fundamentally different because you do not have to deal with the massive problems within this city?
Right.
Or is it better that you just say, hey, we're all, you know, close enough?
Yeah. I mean, I find that if I'm traveling, people are like, oh, where are you from? I'm like, oh, I'm from Chicago. But if right. someone in Chicago is like, oh, where are you from? I'm like, I'm from the suburbs.
Yeah,
there's
I'm from Palatine.
Obviously a huge difference.
Yes.
Yeah, it's funny that I feel like, I don't know, people that I know that live in the suburbs are like, wow, you live in the city. I don't know. I don't want to hate on suburbanites. No, I love you all. But, oh, wow, you're from the city.
We are all suburbanites.
We are.
All the transplants. Because it stinks. We want to kind of redefine ourselves mm-hmm. in a way and say, like, well, I'm not from there anymore. I really feel what you're saying in terms of once you get out of somewhere like Palatine or Crystal Lake, you're just like, okay, cool. I don't ever have to go back there again. Mm-hmm. I don't need to do the high school reunion because, you know, there's that emotional desolation. I think that's really interesting. The mm-hmm. emotional desolation that you feel growing up in a place like that. And it makes its way into the film, especially in the character of the mother. She's amazing.
She's so good.
She plays, I was like, I'm watching a Midwestern yeah. mom right now. She is just the way she delivers every line. And that's that politeness, even in the face of, you know, essentially being a hoarder mm-hmm. and having this, you know, this horrible loss in her life. I think about the scene where she's out in the garden. And that was really deep. That was really emotionally affecting. Because I lost my dad when I was 17, mm. living in Crystal Lake. And you know, it made me think of my own mom. It's like that underlying trauma of you know, losing your partner, and still being in this suburban world and having to pretend that everything's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what's your interest in the relationships within families, because that's really what this whole thing is about, is mm-hmm. how do these people relate to each other? You know, they're bound by blood in a lot of ways, but also you've got, you know, a character that, much like someone like ourselves, you know, left and got away because they needed to, because mm-hmm. they had other opportunities. Meanwhile, they have a sibling that's still dealing with what's going on back in the suburbs. What's your general interest in that?
Yeah, I don't know. I think, like, the film is inspired by my life, but that stuff hasn't happened to me. But I think, like, family, there's like weird alliances that form, and
right.
I'm interested in those alliances. I'm interested in, like, who plays the enemy. And this is kind of like what I mean by like sticking to these narratives that we hold on to for so long about like what your mom or sister or dad have done to you, like emotionally, like what they said like two Christmases ago and why you're still holding on to that. I don't know. I find like myself gravitating towards families, the whites, and like loving them and just being so interested in the dynamics that they have within that unit. And even just like my best friend, my boyfriend, like I'm very interested in the ways that their families relate to each other, because I relate to my family in a way and people relate to their own family in a way. And I think noticing those differences is interesting. And like, yeah, just the way that like, I think communication either breaks down or holds up in certain situations, whether like my sister is around or it's just me and my mom, and how like, yeah, just the allies that form, I think are really interesting, and why. I don't think it's something that like on a personal level I'm like trying to understand and deal with more. And so it just, yeah, makes sense that it kind of comes out in my work also.
I wanted to know what brought you to film specifically, because you mentioned that you've done a little bit of theater, a little stage. What brought you to getting behind the camera?
Well, I wasn't like a theater actor, but I helped put plays together.
Right.
But I studied photography at UIC, took like a documentary media class. I don't know. Really, like Jessica and Eve, they like formed this collective kind of collaboration called the Goodnight Ladies, and we would put like art events on. And also they really pushed me to like make like a short film. So I made a short film in like 2012, which really hasn't seen any light of day. But yeah, we would just like make promo videos for our events. And then I got linked up with like a collaborator, Sam Bailey, who starred in my short and then asked me to edit their web series. So I edited their web series, and kind of from there, just really got on set more, wanted to do more. I started out as an editor and like script supervisor for web series. And then, yeah, I don't know. I really like working on set. So like doing I don't do it all, but like I've produced things, I've AD'd things, script supervised, edited, DP'd. AC'd, gripped. I've done a lot. Also, just in the indie scene, it's not like I'm doing this huge like union thing.
No, you're not working on Chicago PD.
I'm not. I don't know. It's just a really organic process that like I felt like after I graduated with my photography degree, I didn't really want to be like in a gallery space. I didn't want to do that, and that's kind of what I felt like UIC set me up to do.
Mm-hmm. It seems like the traditional quote unquote path for someone in photography.
Yeah. I mean, you could like also go do weddings and stuff, but I was like, I really wasn't ready to do
like,
that.
Fuck weddings.
Yeah, I can't do this.
That.
I'm anti-marriage. I'm not, but I don't know. I think like moving image and like seeing images, not just like static images.
Yeah.
I felt like there was just more room to play with that and more room to like tell a story, obviously. I don't know. It was just kind of organic. And I also like shooting film photographs. So I just felt like I could do that, but then I could also have this like film medium. It just kind of came about like that. Yeah.
Well, and that's something I've found is that a lot of people who get into photography, there's a specific sets of people when they get into film. Some people get into it from a storytelling perspective, mm-hmm. and they do direct, but they came into it because they like writing stories. But then you get people who come in because they really like photography. Mm-hmm. And you know, sometimes we have to remind ourselves that film and photography are totally interlinked.
Yeah.
Because film is photography. It's just photography 24 times a second.
Right.
And the same principles apply in a lot of situations. And what was it? I think at the risk of sounding pretentious, was it Jean-Luc Godard said, if photography is truth, then film is truth 24 times a second. And I really find it interesting when people get in through the photography side, because I think that their films end up looking a lot more dynamic, like your short here. I think it's a very dynamic looking film. I think the compositions are really interesting, as opposed to when I watch a film which is more story focused, which can also be great in its own special way. But when you sat down to shoot this, obviously you had a DP, and what were the conversations you guys were having in terms of the look of what you were going to be shooting, how this was going to play out visually?
Yeah, we are kind of inspired by the same people. So Andrea Arnold and Sean Baker. So
Sean Baker's fantastic.
So good. Me and Greg, my DP, went and saw the Florida Project, and we were just blown away. We were like, this is so good.
Now, I know the last, not to derail, but I know the last scene was controversial for some people. Did you like the run through Disneyland?
I actually just had this conversation last night.
Oh, no
or
way.
Yesterday, yeah.
Oh my God.
I think, like, as a film person, I'm like, oh, okay, they couldn't get the permits to go into Disneyland, so they shot it on like an iPhone. They had to do that. So I don't know. I feel like I liked it. I was definitely moved by it. I was like, wow, that's a strong artistic choice. And like,
I wept. Every time I watch it, I'm just waterworks.
I know. And just like the scene right before it of like her little face and like talking to her friend.
Yeah.
It's like so emotional. And then cuts to this really jarring, like obviously lower quality image of them running through Disney World. I don't know. I think it's like a really beautiful, like escapist kind of shot. I think it's really, I liked it a lot. Yeah. I didn't mind the end.
I liked it.
Yeah.
It was very good.
And Greg saw this, and he's also really inspired by Andrea Arnold, like I just said. And so, I don't know. I really just wanted, like, I felt like with American Honey and the Florida Project, I, like, noticed the camera, but I noticed it in a way of, like, I don't know. I just, like, loved the compositions and loved the movement of the camera. I'm not a big, like, still shot, long shot person. I'm like, let's just keep it moving. Let's keep it like poetic and loose. And so really inspired by those two films. And then I don't know, kind of like sentimentality wise, Mike Mills, I don't know if you know this director.
Yeah.
He has like worked the Beginners with Ewan McGregor.
That's another just it's I like that sentimentality. It's
so sweet.
Yeah. And I feel it gets lost or is absent in a lot of films.
Yeah, I agree.
Especially bigger budget ones that attempt at sentimentality, like I always rail against the movie Interstellar.
Mm-hmm.
I really disliked it because it was that sort of faux sentimentality. And I feel bad because I'm talking about another person's art, and for Christopher Nolan, that might feel very real to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do it all with a very subjective, I'm sorry if it hurts someone's, because some people really fucking love that movie. They really love that Interstellar movie, but, he's trying to balance this high-minded sci-fi opera in the vein of something like 2001 A Space Odyssey,
right,
which has no sentimentality whatsoever, which is kind of the point, with a like purportedly human story about love and how it transcends everything. And I'm like, no, something like The Florida Project is a movie that is about love that transcends everything. The Tree of Life by Terrence Malick is a movie that's about love that transcends everything. And they both use that same kind of more poetic camera as opposed to showing like pictures of black holes and shit. Like,
yeah.
that does not scream sentimentality to me.
Wait, is Interstellar the one with
Matthew McConaughey?
Yeah, McConaughey. Okay.
Where he's like,
right,
he winds up behind a bookshelf or something. He's like in a black hole pushing it to warn his daughter or something. I don't know. I never really attached myself to that one. And I don't mind Christopher Nolan at all. I think he's a very interesting guy.
Yeah.
But back to your short. So you guys really wanted that poetic feel. And do you feel that you achieved it? Like when you go back and watch this, are you satisfied? Are you saying, yeah, this is good, this is what I wanted?
Yeah. Yeah. Which like, I'm like, wow, that doesn't happen often. Or like,
right,
I had a vision and I don't know. I don't want to sound like over proud, but I'm just like, wow, I like totally exceeded my expectations with this. Like, I just didn't think that it could look the way that I wanted to look, and it just looks way better than I thought it could look. I just had a coloring session with the mill, and just seeing it with like new color on it too, I'm like, wow, Greg fucking killed it. You did such a good job. Yeah. Greg, I love
mean,
you.
Let's give the NoCo seal of approval to Greg.
Wow.
Because yeah,
Greg Ray, everyone,
amazing. It really looks like, you know, it looks like what it seems you wanted to, better than what you wanted to look like.
Mm-hmm.
It's rare that I talk to an artist of any, you know, of any medium that feels completely satisfied with something.
Yeah.
Where it's they're just like, you know what, I would have left that song off the album, but you know, it's too late. It's out now. Or someone makes a film, they're like, oh man, this scene should have been here, or maybe we should have used this take versus that take. But you seem really content with it.
I really am. And I mean, I've watched it so many times. It will come out Thursday, so maybe in a year I'll be like, ugh, wow. Or I don't
You're
know, 6 months.
It.
Yeah. I'll be like, oh, damn it. I wish I got this instead. But yeah, for the meantime, I'm just super proud of it. And I'm super proud of everyone that made it. Like, again, so many people came together to like work for like no money. And I think everyone should be really proud of it. And I think that as like a first short film of mine, I'm really proud of it.
It doesn't feel like a first. I'll say that much. It doesn't feel like I couldn't believe that it was your first.
Yeah.
When Raul from Full Spectrum told me about it, and I was just like, I was like, oh well, she must be like an old pro. She knows what she's doing. And then I watched it. I was like, okay, yeah, this is definitely the work of someone who's made a few.
Wow. Thank you.
There it is.
Thank you.
I want to talk about working with Full Spectrum.
Yeah.
Obviously they're a great organization that comes in and tries to inject some funds where they can. I know being a nonprofit is probably a really difficult thing to do,
right.
Especially in this day and age where it's, you know, it's hard to drum up money from people at times, even in the age of crowdfunding. You know what, they're a organization, they're a company that really seeks to elevate a lot of unheard voices. So tell me about your experience working with them and how that came about.
Yeah. So kind of going back to the feature I'd mentioned off air, Holy Trinity, they produced this movie that my friend Molly Hewitt directed and approached me about editing it. They didn't have a huge budget for editing, so we kind of did like a money and a work trade situation.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, hey, we know that you have this short that you want to produce. We can help you produce it for your editing in Holy Trinity. And so they came on, when did they come on? Beginning of June, I think. And then we shot in July. And I think it was a great experience working with them. Harley Foos, who worked for them for, I think, like a bit over a year, really helped it come together. They came on as the production manager. And yeah, like I said, like the fiscal sponsorship is super helpful. The connections that they have with people, like I wouldn't have been able to get myself an interview with you guys. Maybe I could, but I don't know. I didn't know you guys.
Listen, no, we are open to everybody.
Yeah. Right.
we are not big shots. We want to talk. We want to learn too. We want to learn from everybody. So, I mean, it's great that you're here.
Yeah.
I'm very excited that you're here.
I am too.
Do you want to go features next? Do you want to do something of that length?
I mean, I hope it doesn't take me that long to make. It took me like 3 years to make this short. Granted, I had a lot of self-doubt. But the features, maybe. I don't know. My friend Judy, who produced my film, is also producing a feature for her friend now. And I'm like, wow, a feature.
Yeah.
That,
it's scary. It's a little scary.
I'm like, God, it just is so long. I don't know. Like, you can be in post for like years.
Yeah. Do you think people realize that how long it takes to make a movie?
No, I don't. I definitely don't. Like, between pre-production, production, and then post, I mean, it could literally take 10 years.
Yeah.
And that is, I mean, I don't think it would take, hopefully, me that long, but I don't know. I think I might, I would love there to be, like, a middle between, like, a short film and a feature. I know there are movies that exist that are, like, 30 minutes, mm-hmm. but I know, like, with, like, the festival circuit, like, a lot of movies kind of, like, that are that length don't fall into any categories. And so if your goal is to like get it seen at festivals, then it's like,
which is unfortunate, you know, that's just the framework that we're working
with. Exactly.
Right,
it's like hard to schedule with other films.
Mm-hmm.
But Yeah, I mean, festivals are cool. I want to get the laurels and stuff for festivals. That's really what I want. It like gives you more cred, but I don't know. I would love to make a 30-minute movie, which is doable, and people can still watch it.
Yeah.
I don't think, I wouldn't want to go from a short to a feature. That feels like a huge jump. I think I need kind of a middle.
Yeah, you want to try, I guess what would be considered a longer short?
Like a featurette.
Yeah, because it's like, when we think of any sort of film being 30 minutes, that's a TV episode.
Yeah, an episode.
And,
right.
And I think even within television, there's more experimentation within that, where it's like, oh, we're seeing series that are significantly shorter. We're seeing series that do play with, the length of an episode, because mm-hmm. everything is, you get something on Netflix, the entire season is available to you right now. So you're not going to feel cheated if you tune in one week and it's like, oh, I only got 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. But you say you were the show creator or the showrunner, you'd be like, well, I just only had a 15-minute story to tell.
Right.
That's an interesting prospect of I just have a 30-minute story to tell, or in this case, I just have a 15-minute story to tell.
Yeah.
And people can still feel the same level of satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's definitely achievable and possible. Andrea Arnold made this short called Wasp, and it's 25 minutes, and then it won a bunch of awards.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, you are Andrea Arnold, but
it can be done.
It can be done. And I think there just needs to be room for it to be made. Yeah, maybe a short feature. Maybe, it's an hour tops. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, yeah, you've surrounded yourself with a bunch of people so talented. Eve Rydberg's been on the show before.
Oh,
she's fantastic. And Samantha Bailey, that's the same Samantha Bailey who's directed Brown Girls and You're So Talented is mm-hmm. the web series. Mm-hmm. Both fantastic.
Yeah.
So, there's a rich pool of talent that that is existing in this city that doesn't want to work on Chicago PD. Seriously.
I know.
It sucks. There's not a week that goes by that on the show we don't end up mentioning those fucking Chicago shows.
Yeah, I've actually never seen any of them.
Oh, no, neither have I. I've never watched a single.
I don't want to watch. I would love that type of money. Like, damn.
Sure.
Let me pay my people those day rates.
Yeah.
But
yeah. And no disrespect to anybody who gets work on them.
Take
the money.
Get it.
Take the network money.
Definitely.
Because it's all union and you get, lunch.
Pretty good lunch, I think, too. I don't know, but there's also an element. I haven't been on a huge set like that. I've been on a big-ish set. But I think I don't know, working indie and working the way I've been working, there's a lot of room to just learn as you're working mm-hmm. and ask questions and not feel like an idiot for talking to the director. You're allowed to talk to the director.
Yeah.
You're allowed to talk to everyone, which I don't know, has just been super helpful for me. I feel like a very tactile learner. And so I think one of the reasons why I felt confident enough to direct something is I've seen people on set directing. I know what that looks like. I know how to do it. It just is about doing it. So I feel really grateful for that.
What would you say to someone who's I'm ready. I want to direct my first short. I want to get in there. What kind of advice would you give them now that you have, a short out, you've edited a feature, and you've got, a path that you're starting to carve for yourself forward? What would you tell the next set of people who are I'm going to get into film?
Yeah, I would say gather your main crew members. I'll gather your producer, gather your DP. I think once you have those people locked in, it's a lot easier to get other people interested, and make a visual deck, make a pitch deck, make a lookbook for your film, and have a really solid treatment. If your idea is only up in your head, no one's going to understand what you're going for, and no one's going to really be able to see your vision. I would say definitely have a strong pitch deck, have a strong visual treatment and written treatment. And then pitch it to places, talk to people about it. Don't be shy about it. I think if it stays up in your head and you're not speaking about it, it's not going to happen. It's not going to come into existence. You have to want to make it.
Yeah. You got to have some self-actualization.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to have the Chicago, that city of broad shoulders sort of work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's so many great things being made in this city. I can't even believe it.
I know.
Ashley, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
This has been an illuminating conversation. Wow. Again, the name of the film, I Miss Jamie When She's Gone. When will people be able to see this?
So, yes, it's premiering at the Logan Theater on Thursday.
Awesome theater.
It is sold out, unfortunately.
Oh.
but it'll be available online for like a week.
Fantastic.
So
is that going to be on YouTube, Vimeo?
It'll be on Vimeo, definitely. YouTube, probably. It'll be linked in my Instagram bio.
Fantastic. And what is your Instagram handle?
Smilefart with an underscore.
Is that your production
yes.
name? Okay.
I'm making an LLC about it. Yeah.
I once saw another filmmaker tweet out, I think it was a friend of the show, Michael Glover Smith, tweeted out that being an independent filmmaker means having like five LLCs to your name and mm-hmm. none of them make you any money.
Yeah, that's essentially what's probably going to happen. Hopefully not. I'm trying to, yeah. My goal this year is to make money. So
yeah,
hopefully.
It's almost the hardest thing to do in filmmaking. You know, you pour all your blood, sweat, and tears into a creative product. And then you have to sell it.
I know.
You have to get people to give you money for it.
It's kind of the worst part, definitely.
Yeah. Especially when everything is like free, basically. Everybody just wants you. Well, you know, maybe if you could just stream it.
I know.
I'm like, well, I can't. You know, I need to eat.
Yep.
Pay the rent.
Yep. Make a savings account.
Yeah. Who needs a 401k? Who needs it?
Great. Yeah.
Ashley Thompson, director, editor, all around amazing talent here in the city of Chicago. Thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tom.
All right. We will be back next week with lots more Chicago film conversation. We appreciate you sticking with us. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. It's all the same handle, at NoCoCinema. We will be talking to you much more. Reminder, Decaf Don. Friday, April 26th, over at 6740 North Sheridan Road, right next to the new 400 Theater. Head on over to our Facebook for all the details. You'll see me and Connor there doing a little Q&A after the film. We love Decaf Don, and we'd love to see you all there. This has been NoCo Cinema here on WGN+. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I am Tom Hush, and we will see you all next week.